everyone, and welcome to Builders, a podcast from BetaWorks Studios about the amazing people who build things, the makers and the doers, not just the talkers, the people that are helping shape the world we live in. I'm Leila Oweda, and I'll be your guide. In Builders, we bring you a diverse mix of thinkers and leaders from the startup ecosystem. All the shows are recorded live at BetaWorks Studios, our club for builders located in the Meatpacking District of New York City. If you want to know what a club for builders really is, visit betaworks-studios.com. But these podcasts are a good reflection of life in studios. One week, it might be a discussion on crypto, the next, on how technology is affecting music festivals. Today, we're going to hear about designing for blockchain. We have Sarah Baker-Mills, Product Design Director at Consensus.
It's really fucking exciting. I'm sorry for the swears.
Sarah, who previously worked on blockchain at IBM, will talk about how in blockchain, there are lots of talkers and not so many doers. She'll also talk about what the flat structure at Consensus means for participatory design, why tattoos are like Ethereum addresses.
And so, of course, like designers do, one of the teams went, well, what's a tattoo really mean?
After Sarah, you'll hear from Connie Yang, the design director at Coinbase. Connie was formerly a product designer at Facebook, and she'll talk about how she got started as a designer in Ethereum. She'll also talk about how problems around blockchain can be solved by UX, and what's needed to make this new financial system more accessible to everyone.
This is a quote that was in a New York Times article, which I also love as a personal shout out to all the women in the room. Women consider crypto, otherwise the men are going to get all the wealth again.
Amy Jung from Raw House is moderating the conversation. Okay, enjoy the session.
So I'm Sarah, product design at Consensus. I think it's important to understand about Consensus is that it's an extremely diverse and ambiguous and moving so quickly, really fast. And I think part of that is because of how it is structured. And so when I talk about scaling a design practice in this environment, it's not very traditional. But everything is a prototype is kind of, or everything is an experiment. You'll hear that when designers at Consensus talk. And we really try to embody that because you can't be afraid of failure. It's gonna happen in this space. Okay, so this very hard to read graphic, that's the latest one, I think, with all of our spokes. So spokes are like the startups. They are autonomous, they make their own decisions, they are agile, they use different tools. And that is very important to preserve that autonomy because people feel ownership and they will do what it takes to ship product. But it is an ecosystem. The other thing is about the structure of Consensus is that we are trying to walk the walk of decentralization. So it is remote first, flat, no hierarchy at all, global. There's offices every country, right? Yes, or continent, whatever. they're all over the place. Oh, there's a map. Cool. Okay, so when I got to Consensus from IBM Blockchain, the situation was we had a lot of talented designers, but there was a group of them kind of clustered in like an agency format, so all of these spokes were coming to them and just asking for like wireframes or a logo or whatever, but there was no product designer with a spoke over time, iterating and shipping like that. Part of it was with the designers, one, hiring in the right people, but also setting up this structure so that we can preserve the autonomy. A product designer is the lead on their spoke for design. They make decisions as they see fit, but they also, if they choose, are part of the product design circle. So that is trying to get all of the things that you would normally get with a hierarchy in a design organization, but without a hierarchy. So, you know, the critique and the software and the advocacy, and usually I talk about it as kind of like a union, I guess. I think the most important thing, and I'll talk about this, is cross-pollination, though. So this was a retreat that we took in Romania, this middle picture. So I want to quickly say, like, the mindset that I see for a designer in the blockchain space that's successful, right? So one, pretty obviously, is the growth mindset and the approach that, like, we're all learning, we're just going to keep improving, not beat ourselves up if we get it wrong. Another thing that I think, if you've been in the blockchain space, there are a lot of talkers, a lot of thinkers, a lot of think pieces. I'm guilty. Not a lot of doing. So what's really important when we hire in and the behaviors that we want to incentivize is we got a lot of very deeply curious people. Just, it's a minefield of rabbit holes to fall down in this space. The possibilities are endless, right? It's so exciting, but you can fall down these rabbit holes and then just, you know, a week later you've done nothing. So people that are deeply curious, but the people that know how to execute, because we need more experiments out there, and you just have to get something out there. You have to be testing and experimenting constantly. Okay, so in our remote global culture where we get together occasionally, it was important to choose tools that allowed us to create that, like, all in the same room, we all are in the same office kind of feeling, where, you know, you can walk around in an office with other designers and, like, kind of see what they're working on and, oh, what are you doing, or what have you learned, or, hey, do you want any help on that, you know, research project or whatever. So tools that allow you to, like, kind of passively know what everybody's working on. So again, the cross-pollination. And so Nui, who's the lead on Civil, just posted that the other day, and I was like, yoink, that's mine. But it's true. Like, it's really helpful to see what everybody's doing, because then you can say, oh my God, I'm working on that too. And then, like I said before, face-to-face time is just really, really important for us. It doesn't happen that often that we get everybody together, but you know, creating these situations where people can develop accountability to each other, because they're all on their own spokes, and it'd be very easy for them to get isolated and just off on their team. These situations, people develop friendships, and then, as we saw, are more likely to share and jump in and offer advice and just help in general. Okay, so leveling up, design in a remote, global, flat organization. I cannot tell anybody what to do. I have to either figure out a way to demonstrate the value. There's, like, social pressure. There's a lot of tactics, but it hasn't come to that yet, because I feel like designers in general are very interested in leveling up, and I have the opposite problem, which is trying not to let them get burnout. But what I've learned, leveling up with, like, design thinking is what we've doubled down on. Design thinking and design research. You can't force that on these teams, right? We've got a lot of people that know a lot about blockchain, not so much about shipping, not so much about product, but you cannot force them to hire a product designer, and you cannot force them to do a design thinking workshop, and you can't force them to do research. It's been focusing on just the designers, right? They're the biggest advocates. They're the ones who are going to adopt first. Focusing on the people that want what we're selling, and then they are the best advertisers, right? They demonstrate the value of what we're doing. So one was hiring in a design thinking facilitator lead who has created now a circle that services all the different spokes. They want to think through a feature, then they just call them a design thinking facilitator in, and that way the designer doesn't have to facilitate for their own team, they can participate. It's nice to have a neutral third party, and this has really helped teams align and get moving. The other is we hired in design research, building that circle. It's a hybrid approach, so most startups don't need a full-time design researcher, but some are growing enough to where they do, so we have both, like, their support, like, as a service. A big thing that we push, though, and something that we're building is participatory design. We want users coming in and ideating with us. It's harder to do, but way more beneficial in the end. Another thing, just my job is facilitating these situations. I am surrounded by incredible designers who are so much smarter than me, right? So all I have to do is, like, make meetings, get a budget to, like, put them in the same place, and they do this naturally, right? So one is like drawing out these concepts. There's a lot of concepts. The big one lately is token curated registries, which are another thing to wrap your brain around. They're cool. And explaining and teaching each other. So another thing is just, we were having a design jam. It was meant to let off some creative steam. But what happened is blockchain designers, though. The design prompt, I think this time was like, create a 2x2 tattoo, ephemeral tattoo that like has the message of the, I'm butchering this, the message of the future or something. And so, of course, like designers do, one of the teams went, well, what's a tattoo really mean? I mean, that's kind of like a, you know, a life event, or that's kind of like your identity. Well, that's kind of like an Ethereum address. And so, so they made this, and it just, the whole team kind of explored, like, what does an identity actually mean in this space, right? So they kind of teach each other this stuff all the time. And I really love it. They're geniuses. Another big thing that's been happening kind of organically and I want to support more of, this is Johnny right here, and he is live action role-playing the blockchain. And it has taken off like wildfire. Like, this is the prototyping that we have to do. Like, in design thinking, right, you prototype, right? This is it. This is, you got to act it out. So this is Nue on Civil. This was just at Ethereal last weekend. They had this whole audience doing commit reveal voting to see what would happen. And the results were that the team empathized, the developers and the product managers empathized with their users so much more when they have to act it out like this. Design system, it's happening. We need one. People that don't have designers need a better way to like prototype and get their dApps out there with better, higher quality results. When you look across our products, you're like, how are you gonna do that? Then none of these are the same, right? None of these have the same branding. None of these have the same user groups. But what we have found is that there are a ton of similar UX patterns that it is worth exploring. So that's coming. I just want to say number three, burnout mitigation. And I think this is a big part of being in this space. It's really fucking exciting. I'm sorry for the swears, but it really is. It is so much fun and there is so much happening and people are so cool. And I am seeing it's not just designers either, but people can get burnt out quickly. I don't know what to do about it necessarily when I cannot see people in a remote environment, but it's on the list of to-dos. We're gonna have some interns in 2019. We're gonna have a pretty sweet experience for them. I'm excited about that. So anyway, I wanna say being a designer in this space is amazing. The community is amazing. It is really nice to be united by doing something meaningful. If you're interested, you should join us.
And so I just wanted to introduce Connie Yang, who is the director of design at Coinbase. Prior to that, she spent 4 years at product design at Facebook, which is really interesting. She's had her background in advertising, mobile games, social networks. So we're excited to hear what she's going to say.
Thank you. Yeah. Aw, you guys are so nice. Thank you so much. So thank you, Sarah, for the, wherever you went, oh, there you are, and for the overview and tactics, all great stuff. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about design and crypto overall as an industry. So let's start with, the question I get asked the most is how I got started being a designer in blockchain. So this is a circle around the time that like I first heard of Ethereum. So somebody had posted, hey, Ethereum was $12, now it's $40. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, I don't know what that means. So at this time, I very dramatically bought 5 whole ETH. It's very, very exciting. And sold it like 2 months later. Nothing interesting happened. And then, but before I did that, I was trying to learn what was going on. So I went and Googled, and this is what, like, oh, this is blockchain. I'm like, okay, this is not very helpful. Like, how many people actually know what's happening here? The industry is not doing a good job at explaining itself, because this is what, like, shows up for everybody, right? I know, it's terrifying. Then I found this company called Coinbase, and I was like, okay, this is a way that some people say is good to buy Bitcoin or Ethereum, whatever it is I was looking at. So I was like, okay, well, why would I trust Coinbase? I don't know who they are. And then I remember, so I live in San Francisco, so there's a lot of, and Coinbase is based in San Francisco, and there's a lot of people there who work in tech. And I remembered, okay, my friend John, that's John, works at Coinbase. And John isn't gonna steal my money. Literally, this is what I was thinking. He has a kid, he has like a, you know, reputation. He's not gonna, I was like, if something bad happens, I can go and be like, John, can I have my money back? And then I was like, okay, clearly, if this is what it took for me, somebody who's like fairly savvy, has been working in tech for years and understands like what generally it is to actually trust a company, how is this possibly going to scale? That is like the biggest problem that I encountered, and that's what I felt like design could make the biggest impact. So, how do you scale trust? There's no simple like blanket solution, but these are some of the points that I think about. I think about education, making sure people understand what it is, what its purpose is, and how you actually use it. Clarity, making sure each single step, people can really only digest one piece of information at a time, so you shouldn't make them try to have too much at once. Ease of use, usability, obviously, you have to be able to get to the next steps, understand what's going on to get there. And here's a big one that's really interesting for overall blockchain consistency. Different websites, different exchanges, all do sends, withdraws, receives, deposits, whatever you want to call it, in very different ways. People can't even tell if they're doing the same thing on different wallets or exchanges. That's a big problem. We should standardize everything. So the biggest problem in blockchain is user experience. It's very exciting. All those problems we just talked about, design is the solution. That's so great. Okay, and now, like, for a change of pace, I'm going to talk about road signs in England. I know, it sounds, just bear with me for a while. Okay. This is what road signs used to look like in England in the 1930s. So the top speed of a car back then was 35 miles per hour. And look at how cute and look at how many letters there are everywhere. This is just like what it was made for. And then you fast forward to 20 years later, the 1950s, the top speed of the car has gotten to 75 miles per hour. But the signage has not changed. You're still looking at those like very hard to read signs. So this is actually a photo of a protest. People are protesting for the government to add speed limits to roads because people were actually getting killed because the technology was advancing faster than the actual signs were there to keep it up. So how did they solve this problem? I didn't have anything to do with this. So it fell upon two designers in England were tasked with solving this highway signage problem. So they had two questions or two restrictions. What do you need to know in traveling at high speeds? And at what distance do you need to know it? That was it. That was like what it boiled down to. And it required completely radical thinking. This was new. This had never happened before. No one had traveled at such speeds in this sense, right? This is a very, very interesting time that might be similar to where we're in right now. So this is the previous sign, as you might remember, and they looked at so many things. They literally, because they're doing it for the first time, they made giant signs, pre-computer, they made giant signs, put them against trees, and drove past them at 60 miles per hour in the dark, in the rain, to understand at what point this was the right design. So that's how they went from this to this. This is done in the late 1950s. Literally, this is still the sign that is in place today because they solved for the right problems and the solution worked out. A big difference is going from all caps to a mixed case, which was hugely controversial at the time. People thought it was very ugly. Much easier to read because from a distance you can read up and down shapes quicker than you can read an all caps block. What a concept. That's how we went from all of those signs to all the stuff like this. This is a photo taken in 1957, I believe, and it still looks the same. Fascinating. So that emoji didn't even work at all. Okay, so here are some of the design problems in cryptocurrency that are gonna be so fun, and I can't wait for all of you to solve. This is the first question that I get asked by people trying to learn the space. How do I even get Bitcoin? They think like, I have to get a whole Bitcoin? That's expensive, right? Everybody's heard that. So. Oh, wait, no, this is about something else. This is about addresses. Just kidding, I'm talking about addresses. How do I get Bitcoin? So we used to have a street address map, and that was our identity. People knew if you mailed a letter, you could get there. And then we had to change this mapping to an actual phone number, so people knew, like, all right, this like strange 9-digit code, you'd get to you. We got to email, this got even weirder. But, you know, we got used to it. We know what emails are. Now we have to deal with this. It's so confusing. How is anyone supposed to understand what's going on and how is it different or if you're doing it correctly? This is the first time where like you can accidentally email someone all of your money on accident. This is a crazy world that we're in, right? Oh, here we go. Do I have to buy a whole Bitcoin? This is what I get asked all the time. So no, you could buy a Bitcoin if you wanted to, but you can also buy half, or you can also buy the smallest denomination of Satoshi. This is also a very strange concept, right? You can get so many decimals out, which leads, well, so, and it's not just Bitcoin, well, these are some, but then like there's thousands of them. More are being added every single week. So how do you actually design currency? There's a lot of visual explorations that need to be done here to make it clear and easy for people to actually understand. So, right, that's a lot. And these are even all circles, almost. Another problem, as I was talking to earlier, referencing earlier with the big fractions, you get really long, really long numbers all after the decimal place. So let's see, like this is what we just looked at before, and then this is what it roughly translates to at some price like a few weeks ago, so I don't know if it's up to date. Hugely long numbers. And what's really confusing is the number that is the longest, it's the least valuable. This is totally like an inverse of what we're used to scanning and reading quickly. All right, what are some things we could do? Okay, we could align the decimals. All right, step one. Well, that doesn't look good. Okay, well, let's see. Let's fade them out a bit so it's not important. Still not aligned. So if we add a bunch of zeros, okay, that's just way too many numbers. And then, all right, I could do a reverse comma so we can add apostrophes after a decimal, right? What do you think of that? No, it's not a good idea. It's very confusing. And then if I round it down, I'm like, well, then we're back to like zero. Maybe because maybe those numbers aren't important. And then we're back to where we, that's a sad face. I have no idea what happened there. Fascinating. Okay. So complicated problems. And then that's just some basic usability stuff for the basic concepts that maybe some of us are quite used to by now. But there's also really interesting broader questions, such as how do we shift from our world of credit cards to a world of cryptocurrency? It took us a few decades to get used to credit cards. How do we build trust in a concept instead of a company? How do you trust in blockchain instead of Bank of America? Who do you call to complain? How do you deal with that? How do you solve your own problems? And how do we make it simple enough so that even a child can understand? Children understand the concepts of money. They know what a bank is. How do we get them to the point where they can understand what blockchain is? That's where actual widespread adoption and success would actually take us. We have the opportunity now to redo all of the financial systems. That's actually never happened before in the world, right? They've just sort of like been cobbled together over the past mostly like two centuries, and it is the system that we're in today. In order to create a more egalitarian, equal opportunity access for everybody, we have to make sure everyone is understanding what these concepts are and able to build and contribute to it. This is a quote that was in a New York Times article, which I also love as a personal shout out to all the women in the room. Women consider crypto, otherwise the men are going to get all the wealth again. It's true. Like, there's a statistic in this article that said of all the people who are investing in cryptocurrencies, about 5% are women. That's ridiculously low. And it really shows that when the early stages of these new technologies are happening, that's when a lot of the fortunes are made. That's when a lot of the new technologies are built. And if people don't get in there and start building products that look like that are for people like them and for people beyond like what the current technologists and really high-end protocol people are in there, we're never going to get to that broader access point. So it's really important for everybody to get started early and to make sure you are representing your views and building products that you think are important. This is it. This is when the ecosystem of cryptocurrency blockchain is being created. Everybody, especially all you guys here with design, that's awesome. This is where you can all make a difference. We have the highways, right? We have the protocols. We have so much technology. We have so much stuff built. It is incredibly exciting how many powerful technologies are being utilized out there or trying to be utilized. But we don't have the signage yet. We don't have the caution signs. We don't have the steering. We don't have the understanding of what's going on. And this is where design comes into play. So, thank you.
Awesome, so this is the fun part. We get to actually have a conversation. And so what we really wanna do is, we start usually with the question, basic question of why we even need designers in this place, but you guys very much so stated multiple reasons. And so I think we talk a lot about the problems, but what have been some of the points, like two points that have actually been crucial to the success and the speed of growth? Because maybe if you're not in design, how can you actually support that growth, right? I know we have a big infrastructure problem, but what are some of the points that you guys have seen that have been actually helpful and that we need more people behind that to support?
Well, I mean, my quick thoughts are that everybody can learn some degree of design. It's actually it's going to sound strange to say, I don't think design is that like hard. I think you just need to be very thoughtful about looking at something. Look at something that works. Look at something that doesn't work. See what the differences are. Be analytical, especially developers. Developers are great at thinking in systems and being analytical about how to solve problems. And these are like at its forefront, like the building blocks of what makes good design and making sure that functionality and understanding is in place first. So I would just recommend everybody do a little design brush up.
I think one of the best things a designer can do, especially in these days of design systems and our jobs are kind of changing, is to develop facilitation as a core skill. Because if you're in the space, you're gonna be on a team of people that most likely don't understand what you're doing. You have no idea what they're doing. And so communication and an ability to collaborate and the ability to like make sure everybody is aligned and people are being heard and all ideas are being like yes anded. Those behaviors are what I'm witnessing across these products, the designers that are able to do that and to lead by facilitation are doing pretty well. Like those products are moving and they're focusing on their users.
And so on the user end, one of the questions that I think we commonly get is we're observing, right? You guys talk a lot about observing the behavior, like, oh, someone emails you, hey, lost my crypto, like all my Bitcoin, what do I do? And I think, Connie, you were talking about, like, if I lost it, I can ask John. But, you know, like, who's John in our life if you've never experienced that, right? And so, how do you build those, with something so immutable and that just happens and it's done, how do you build those feedback loops so that you could see those user behaviors?
Just to paraphrase, to understand, like, how do we sort of stop people from making those types of mistakes or helping them when they get there? Well, we have a variety of different products, I guess, as Coinbase as a company. Like, our main product doesn't let people actually use their own 12-word seed phrase. Like, we keep all the private keys for you, so they never have to interact with that. And we try to do a good, and we funnel everybody into that area first, because it's the most clearest parallel to the existing bank account that they might have, or a brokerage account. And we try to reserve the more complicated products, such as Commerce or Toshi, where you do have to custody your own funds through a lot of like frictional gateway steps, and we try to make it as clear as possible and really only make those products generally surfaced and available to people who probably are more experienced in the space. But it's still a problem that we try to catch people, but it's never 100%.
So are you leading a lot of those behaviors? Like, you're leading them through a behavior that you want them to go through, or are you, is there, you know, on the opposite end of that, which is you kind of watch what they do and like, oh, actually, most people, like, let's say we get to a critical mass where people are like, well, I want to know my address now. How do you guys differentiate between that?
We try to give people choices when possible, without being, you know, financial advisors. We try to say, like, if you want to choose to connect your bank account or your credit card, it's generally recommended to connect your bank account because the fees are lower. So we'll say recommended, and we'll have a line that says, learn more. Why? We always try to give people an out to find out more information if they're interested, but we try to keep the main experience as simple as possible.
I just want to say I feel very conflicted about this because I choose to use Coinbase because it is a nice experience, right? And I feel safe while I'm doing it. And products that help users and help them make good choices and are very clear about what's going to happen and add back in some friction so they're not doing horrible permanent things. And, you know, I only got into this like a couple years ago. Okay, so I'm not like OG crypto. But I feel like part of this is about giving power back to people, taking out middlemen. And so I feel very strange about doing anything other than trying to explain what's happening, and here is why you need to manage this private key, and here is why you need to like own this information, and you take care of it because now you are in control of your assets or your value, and it's yours. Nobody is between you. I think there's something very powerful about that, but it's clearly not gonna work for a lot of people. So I'm just, all right, that's not a non-answer. I'm very conflicted, Dan.
I think it was a good point. I think different people are gonna want different things within the foreseeable decade. I don't think everybody's gonna move all one way soon. So I think it's fair to be conflicted.
Is it important for you to define who your user is gonna be and stick to that? And like, Coinbase, I mean, on my end, I started off with Coinbase, and I think this is an experience that most people have, which is they walk you through it, so it's really simple. And then when you become like more into it. You guys have GDAX, which you can have trading and you get more intense to it. So you kind of like walk through this experience. Do you guys have the mindset that you guys know what kind of users that you want to target? Or is it that you just kind of say, hey, this is how we are going to work. And if you're into it, you're into it. If not, like try a different experience.
So we have so many products with so many different user groups. I cannot say like one or the other. I will say that as a design circle, we encourage the business side of things to focus, like, who is this for, right? And then we will design appropriately for them and test for that, right? But it's going to look different across all of the different products. I think what you started to mention about them getting a bunch of new users, we had our own, like, CryptoKitty crisis. It was during a design thinking workshop that I had spent a lot of time planning, and I had like three out of like of the teams there were infrastructure teams, and they disappeared during my workshop. CryptoKitties ruined my workshop because they're like, oh my god, scaling. And what it turned out is that if you read what Dan Finlay wrote about it for MetaMask, it was a button. It was one button that users could resubmit their transaction. They didn't know what gas was. They didn't know why things were taking so long. They weren't putting enough gas, and so they thought Ethereum was broken. And it was not. It was just they just didn't know. How are they going to know? And so it's going to be a lot of little things. I hope we've learned our lesson there. But like there are going to be a lot of hiccups and trips and for both infrastructure and user experience that is going to teach us what interacting with this stuff should look like. So we're going to bumble around for a little bit, but like hopefully with more designers and research, we'll get better.
So with blockchain, developers get incentivized through mining, right, and through developing, and so you actually see like a physical value come back to you. Do you guys, how do you see that world for designers? Like how do we get designers to have that same feeling of like there's some immediate value, or it could be a, you know, like how do you incentivize for designers?
I mean, I think of it as the same incentive that designers have doing other, building other products. Like, it's not always, like, an immediate incentive. I mean, designers could invest and trade and, you know, do all the other stuff. But I think the satisfaction comes from, these are the problems that I talked about are really difficult problems that no one has solved yet. I think if you're able to contribute to that and to feel like you are pushing the industry forward, which there is plenty of room to push, so I welcome everybody, I think that's where you feel like you are actually making an impact in the world and trying to shift it to a place where blockchain, this fascinating technology that can change so much for the better, is actually getting utilized. I think it's more about the macro movement rather than like an individual movement.
The honest answer is alcohol and jacuzzis. I have tested this, and this is how they are motivated.
Okay, that's about all we have time for today. Of course, if you're a member of BetaWorks Studios, then you would be able to go to all of these events, hear everything, and hang out with these great people after. Studios is like the best bit of a conference, the bit where you hang out and chat, but permanent. For membership info, visit betaworks-studios.com. So to recap, that was Sarah Baker Mills from Consensus. She's at StarSoup7 on Twitter. Connie Yang from Coinbase is at Connie Curious. And Amy Jung from Rawhouse at Itza My Jung. You can find their names, handles, and more info about this presentation all in the show notes. The next episode of Builders will be all about building experiences in the age of Instagram.
I guess I'll just be exaggerated because it's more fun. The Sistine Chapel's ceiling wasn't designed to be a selfie moment.
Subscribe to Builders and it will magically pop up in your feed. I'm Layla Oueda and this was Builders. Until next time, happy building.